You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everyone, to a new week of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily analysis on the NBA's best basketball team. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. As the Rockets enter the final week of the regular season, they do so now on a week that, coming off a week, that they've lost two times. The Rockets, after suffering a loss in San Antonio on Sunday, also suffered another loss at home against the Oklahoma City Thunder on Saturday evening. Both of those national ABC games, so perhaps there's a hashtag ABC curse. Kidding, of course. The reality is that the Rockets had a lot less to play for than the Spurs and Thunder in those games. The Rockets, with their latest loss, falling to 64-16 on the year. Still the most wins in franchise history, of course, prior record being the championship team of 93-94 with 58. And most impressively of all, even factoring in these two losses, a 2-2 stretch over the past week, in which they've been entrenched as the number one seed throughout, so of course motivation is down. The Rockets are 34-4, which is ridiculous, since January 18th. That was the return of James Harden after missing 2.5 weeks with his grade 2 hamstring injury. So it's one bad week in the grand scheme of things, and it's one bad week in which it's largely explainable because the Rockets had their two losses against teams with a whole heck of a lot more to play for than they did. In terms of Saturday's loss against the Oklahoma City Thunder, James Harden led the way in scoring with 26 points, did have 5 turnovers, also had 9 assists. Chris Paul also had 9 assists, 17 points, but did so on just 6 of 15 shooting. Clint Capella had a pretty encouraging game, I thought, even if the line wasn't eye-popping. 10 points, 7 rebounds, 3 blocks in the middle against Steven Adams. P.J. Tucker did what you would expect him to do in these bigger statement games. 16-10, made 4 of his 6 threes, but ultimately it wasn't enough against the Oklahoma City Thunder team, led by Russell Westbrook and Paul George. Westbrook with 24, George with 24, Carmelo Anthony with 22, that simply had a lot more to play for. So as we make our way through our usual 3 points recap of the game, we're going to start with the guys who did play for the Rockets, discussing what went right and what went wrong there. In segment two, we'll discuss the guys who didn't play. That's Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson, and why I do think there's a potential role for each of those guys in rectifying the things that went wrong. And then in segment three, we're going to talk about the playoff possibilities. Most importantly, who the Rockets, as the West's number one seed, are likely to play now as a number eight with just 4 games, with just 4 days to go. Most teams just have 2 games left in the race for really all the way from 4 through 9 in the Western Conference, which of course includes the number eight spot and who the Rockets could play. We'll discuss that in segment three. For now, let's lead by discussing the players who are actually on the court Saturday night against the Thunder. In general, other than the return of Nene, who played just 14 minutes, and we'll touch on him a little bit more in the second segment when we discuss Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon, their potential roles, the two who did not play, other than Nene coming back, it was largely the same rotation as was out there Thursday against the Blazers when the Rockets raced out to that 22-point halftime lead and then had to escape with a Chris Paul buzzer beater to get a 2-point win, had a 17-0 run go against them in the final 3.5 minutes. And in our post-game show, I discussed the need to, as Mike D'Antoni has said it before, respect the game a little more. The Rockets turned the switch off. And if you look at the box score Saturday night, you might see a similar trend in that on Thursday, the Rockets scored 66 points in the first half, just 30 in the second. Not quite as exaggerated against the Thunder, but overall, you still see a similar trend. The Rockets scored 62 in the first half and just 40 in the second, including 19 in the fourth quarter. It might look similar, but in my opinion, the silver lining, I don't think the Rockets flipped the switch off. If anything, I think they turned it on a little bit more early in the game. When the Thunder had 61 points, I thought the Rockets' defense was a little sluggish. In the second half, honestly, I thought they turned the intensity up a little bit. So it wasn't all a matter of lack of effort. Maybe there was some lethargy in the early going, but when it came to winning time, it wasn't like the Rockets just tried to walk out at halftime. I think it was more things the Thunder did right and why they're such a scary opponent. Even though the Thunder are 46-34 now, there's a reason teams are not wanting to play them as a lower seed in the first round, and I think you could see that on Saturday night. Now, to be fair, the 61 that the Thunder scored in the first half, they were still trailing because the Rockets played well enough offensively. They scored 62 of the 61. Yes, there were some very friendly whistles, a couple of very strange technicals in this game. And as some folks have pointed out on Twitter, yes, I think some of the calls reflected the fact that the Thunder needed this game to get to the playoffs, and the Rockets did not. They certainly got a benefit of the doubt on a few occasions. That said, it's kind of pointless to discuss officiating on here because we're a Rockets podcast. We discuss what the Rockets do right and what they do wrong. So in terms of the Rockets, what they can control, the defense early on, as we said, was not especially there in the second half. Held the Thunder just 19 points in the third quarter. There was a stretch when they could seem to get nothing other than a Corey Brewer corner three, which is exactly what you want if you're the Rockets. 47 points in the second half, and some of those came when the Rockets went into foul mode in the final minute of the game, trailing by anywhere from 6 to 8 points. So in general, the effort was there, I thought. The execution was a different story. Particularly on offense down the stretch, the Rockets had as much as a 6-point lead in the second half, went away early in the fourth quarter. During that stretch that Eric Gordon would normally be out there, I don't think that's a coincidence. We'll talk about Eric's role specifically in segment two. But I thought there was a 5-possession segment in which Ariza missed 2 really good looks from three. He finished just 1 of 5 from behind the arc as a an individual. Harden had 2 turnovers. He had 5. They employed a similar trapping strategy the Thunder did to what Portland did on Thursday. Still trying to see how Mike D'Antoni adjusts to that. Maybe it's partly based on personnel. Maybe it's partly based on not wanting to tip his hand before the playoffs, but it seemed like that stymied the Rockets in a similar manner to what happened on Thursday against the Blazers, a different coverage. And then, simply above all else, the Thunder just have a ton of talent defensively. Paul George, Steven Adams, those are 2 of the best defenders in the game when they are engaged and dialed in at their positions. Russell Westbrook, often a liability, but when it's a win-or-go-home type game, he certainly has the athleticism that he can be a difference-maker defensively. Had 4 steals tonight. In terms of adjusting to teams trying to scheme Harden out of the game through these traps, well, you turn to your next 2 playmakers. One of them, Eric Gordon, was out, and the other, Chris Paul, we mentioned 17-9, but shot just 6 of 15 from the field, 40%, only 2 of 8, 25% from 3. This was a game in which you needed a little more efficiency from Chris Paul, and for whatever reason, you didn't get it. Maybe at 32 years old, he's focused a little more on his health. We heard after the game, his objective for the final week, stay healthy. So maybe there's something to be said for that. Maybe it's just randomness. But if James is being schemed out by the defense, then you need your other playmakers to step up. Eric was not out there. Chris didn't play well. And ultimately, against Oklahoma City Thunder team with, as we mentioned, Carmelo, Paul George, Russell Westbrook, all scoring 22 or more points, the Thunder just had a few more weapons down the stretch of this game. And I think ultimately that's what won it for them. Good news, it's not like the Portland situation, which I thought the Rockets just flipped the switch and didn't respect the game. No, they wanted it. The rebounding battle was at a standstill, 42 for the Thunder to 41 for the Rockets. The silver lining, as I mentioned earlier, one of many I think you can take out of this, Clint Capella, 10-7-3 against Steven Adams. We're 12 months removed from when he looked like a boy compared to Steven Adams, a man, in that playoff series. Thought this game showed that Clint has come a long way. He held the Rockets steady inside. From 3, the Rockets made 14 of the 37 looks. That's nearly 38%. It's not as if the Rockets played poorly. Gerald Green off the bench, 14 points in 28 minutes, 5 of 10 from the field. Again, significantly outplayed Joe Johnson. For those wondering who's going to be playing in the final wing spot in the playoffs, I think that has long been decided, as I've said for a while here on Locked On Rockets. So certainly there are some positives to take. I thought the Rockets played hard. I thought it was an entertaining game. The Thunder just, they needed it a little more. And ultimately, when it got to winning time, you saw why the Thunder are not a team that anyone wants to play in the first round. Now, yes, I've said, and I'm on the fence, you could talk me in either way, but I've said in the past that I fear the Blazers in the second round a little more than the Thunder. You could go either way on that, but I don't think there's really going to be an easy path in the second round, no matter who you play, unless there's a major upset, and that's unlikely. I think that's going to be taxing for you no matter what. I think what you want to avoid is that kind of grueling series in the first round. So you have 2 of those before you probably play Golden State in the Western Conference Finals. And while I think I still fear the Blazers, if they're fully healthy, a tad more than the Thunder, well, I think the Thunder are far scarier than anyone else in the Western Conference playoffs. And that's why, in my opinion, keep them as far away from the 8th seed as you possibly can. And I suppose one positive you can take out of this game is by virtue of the Thunder winning in Houston, they are now significantly less likely to be the 8th seed than they were heading into that game. We'll talk about that more in segment 3 of our 3 points recap, in which we discuss the playoff picture and what Saturday's results mean for who Houston is likely to play. Now in segment 2, we're going to transition from initial segment discussing the guys who did play, the likes of James Harden, Chris Paul, Clint Capella, to guys who did not play, which are Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson. Eric Gordon with left ankle soreness, that's more maintenance. We've discussed a lot down the home stretch of this year in which Eric Gordon, since the All-Star break, has been so efficient from both the field and three-point range. They see the value of a rested Eric Gordon, and so it doesn't surprise me at all that going into the playoffs, they're figuring out a way to get him every off day they can. The Ryan Anderson injury, it's a little different because, yeah, that's an ankle sprain. We saw it. Hopefully he'll be back for the playoffs, but it's a hit because Ryan's a rhythm player. You can see he shoots the ball a lot more, which is important in Mike D'Antoni offense, when he's confident. And ideally, you'd like to let him get confident before the playoffs. May not have that luxury. It is what it is. But in this game, especially against a Thunder defense that, as I've mentioned before, led by Paul George and Steven Adams, has so much length and physicality, I thought the absence of both of those guys was very much felt. I'm going to lead with a really good tweet from Jason Williams, one of our followers on Twitter, at Astro Rocket, longtime listener, a good friend of mine from way back in the day from Clutch Fans. But he was responding to a tweet in which someone said, it's not a wake-up loss, it's more a matter of being shorthanded in Oklahoma City, making more desperation plays down the stretch. And how Jason responded to that was, Mike D'Antoni didn't want to give away possible adjustments. The late traps on Harden are impossible if Patterson is guarding Ryan Anderson, and Eric Gordon absolutely eats with the shots and opportunities that others were getting. I think there's validity to both of those. I'll start with Ryan Anderson because we've seen it two games now, these traps, and I think Ryan's shooting as a spacer makes it so difficult to have that other big come and help in a way that we have seen Portland and Oklahoma City just sell out. Now, there are questions. Ryan has to, first, be willing to shoot. Secondly, he has to be not so much of a defensive liability that he's unplayable because of what he's given up defensively. Now, I think the Rockets are hoping that if you put him at the center spot, he's gotten almost all of his minutes at the five since returning, then that hides his lack of foot speed, lateral mobility, that it kind of masks those issues a little bit. We'll have to wait and see because, honestly, coming off the hip flexor, now this turned ankle, we haven't seen that many minutes from Ryan, period, over the last I would say more like last month to 6 weeks of the season. But I thought this was a game that, to me, showed you why Ryan Anderson, if healthy, is probably going to be your backup five in the playoffs over Nene. Now, there are certain matchups that you might prefer the power of Nene, but I thought this one, when people think hashtag playoff Nene, they go back to that dominant playoff series he had over the Thunder last year, and the question is, at 35 years old, does Nene still have that in him? Saturday night, I know the stakes were not that high, but it's one that makes you wonder, because the Thunder, it's the most favorable matchup for him. We have cited that all year long as the kind of situation where you would like to see Nene shine. In 14 minutes, 2 points, 2 rebounds, 4 fouls, 0 of 2 from the field. That's just not a very impactful player, and he only got a couple of shots, missed both of those, did get to the free throw line 4 times, made just 2 of them, but he was nowhere near as impactful as Clint Capella, and that's in great contrast to the playoffs last year, of course, when Nene significantly outplayed Capella. And in general, in terms of the half-court style, how plodding and physically daunting the Thunder can be in terms of their half-court offense, and especially their half-court defense, I should say, it seemed like a good setup for Nene, and yet it still didn't work. And that's the Thunder. Just imagine going up against a team like Minnesota or Denver that's more wide open. This should have been the most friendly game for Nene out of all of them based on his history, and he still didn't have it. So while I would love to be proven wrong, I think at some point you can't just blindly hope that hashtag playoff Nene from last year is going to come back. At some point you have to deal with what you have, the 35-year-old, right now, and there is very little that I have seen this year that shows you he's capable of busting out that higher gear on any sort of a consistent basis in a playoff series. Now, I'd love to be wrong, and if I am, I'll be the first one to admit it and tip my hat to him. But for right now, I think that's where Ryan Anderson comes into play. I think that's why we've seen him more at the five, because the Rockets see that as potential vulnerability. I think that's also why the Rockets went after Brandon Wright via buyouts. Unfortunately, that ended up not working out because of Wright's knee injury. But either way, those minutes at the five, I don't think they are ticketed for Nene when in a setting in like Saturday's 108-102 loss to the Thunder. That was as advantageous to him as you will find, and he still didn't take advantage. Now, Ryan gives you more spacing. He gives you more energy. We've discussed that as a rebounder, while he's not a positive guy in terms of his overall averages, in smaller doses, you only play him for 15 to 20 minutes, then he's a lot more willing to throw his body around. He has a higher rebounding rate because he's not trying to conserve energy to get through 30 minutes. But besides just the overall spacing throughout a game, where he comes in really useful is against this trapping strategy. I agree with Jason Williams there in that if you trap with that big, like they did a lot with Patrick Patterson being the help on Saturday evening, then that's just not going to happen if you have Ryan Anderson out there. So I think Ryan's absence was certainly glaring, but I would say Eric Gordon's absence even more so, because it goes back just to the lack of playmakers. Harden led the team, 26 points, 9 assists. But 5 turnovers. Chris Paul, 17 points, 9 assists, but 3 turnovers. That's 8 turnovers between those two guys. Paul shot just 40% from the field and 25% from 3. One thing I should have mentioned earlier, Harden 3 of 8 from behind the arc, so it's a third consecutive, I would say, at least decent game from James from 3. Two of them spectacular. This one, nearly 38%. You'll certainly take that. So the good news is that the 3-point shooting slump, James seems to have put that in the rearview mirror, which is nice to see heading into the playoffs. But in terms of relieving the pressure off of him, I thought the minutes early in the fourth quarter in general, those are often where Eric shines. But if you're going to hedge James Harden the way they did, then Eric Gordon as a shooter, combination of shooter and a playmaker, it's a matchup that's ideal for him. The first two Houston-Oklahoma City games of the season, both of those in Oklahoma, Gordon shot a combined 6 of 13, almost 50% from behind the arc. In general, the Rockets, I've said all year long, they're going to go as far as Eric Gordon and Clint Capella can take them, because you generally know the level of impact you're going to get from James Harden and Chris Paul. So in terms of taking them to that next level, that Golden State tier, it's those two variables, Eric Gordon, Clint Capella. Capella played relatively well. Gordon did not play at all. And if you don't have those two guys out there and clicking, then the Rockets' upside is limited. And against Oklahoma City Thunder team that when desperate and when dialed in defensively, which they were, you need that third playmaker to truly take it to the next level on the offensive end of the floor. The Rockets didn't have it, and it got a little stagnant. The shooters missed some shots, mentioned two big misses from Ariza down the stretch, who made just one of his 5 shots from 3. Harden had a few turnovers. Chris Paul only made 40% of his shots, and there were only so many options the Rockets had. And against a lot of teams, James Harden and Chris Paul is enough. The Oklahoma City Thunder, defensively, they're not most teams. That's the kind of team where when they are dialed in, that's why you need not just the big two, but you also need Clint Capella and Eric Gordon both playing at a near all-star level. That's what makes the Rockets truly special. And on Saturday, certainly Eric's a key player for the Rockets regardless, and their surge since the all-star break, him shooting nearly 50% from the field, over 45% from behind the arc, has been a huge part of that. But against top-tier defenses, which the Thunder can be, when dialed in, and tip your hat to them on Saturday, they were limiting the Rockets just 40 points in the second half, 19 in the fourth quarter. You need your playmakers, you need your shooters, and losing Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson, that takes away a lot of shooting, a lot of spacing, and then with Eric, it takes away an extra playmaking component as well. So while those guys, they're important absences no matter what, against a team as athletic and quality as Oklahoma City, it really, really stands out. So I suppose if you want something positive to take out of the game, it's that the Rockets played the Thunder so close, even with the Rockets not playing especially hard, certainly not matching the Thunder intensely level, a team desperate to make the playoffs, and doing so even with two of their most important shooting guns, and in Eric's case, one of their playmaking guns, not available. Now for the third and final segment, let's turn our focus to the playoffs. Because we don't want to make a mountain out of a molehill. It's one game out of 82 at the end of the year in which, as Chris Paul said after the game, the main motivation for the Rockets is staying healthy. Bigger picture, what these last few days are about is sorting out seeds 4 through 9 in the Western Conference, which are so incredibly jumbled. Literally any of those teams could be in any of those slots. But with only two games left for most teams, including the Thunder, it's coming into focus a little more in terms of the scenarios. There's still a lot of variability, but we know if Team X wins this game, if Team Y wins, we can discuss with a little more stability what's going to happen and what the key games are to watch. And for me, my biggest takeaway from Saturday, I don't think the Thunder could beat the Rockets in the playoff series, especially not if they have Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson, the Rockets. I do think they could tax you, and that makes them a lot more difficult than the other teams in that 4-9 matrix. I know some would argue the Jazz, although the Jazz are kind of almost a lock, I would say, for the 4 or 5. So really, I think for the Rockets, the teams that are potentially in the 8-seed mix, the Thunder, the Spurs, the Pelicans, the Timberwolves, the Nuggets, to me, the Thunder are by far the most daunting of that group. And while I don't think the Thunder could take 4-7, I think they could take enough out of you that it could hamper your performance in later rounds, including by the time you hopefully get to play Golden State in the Western Conference Finals. So the good news is that because the Thunder wins tonight, well, I'll start with the bad. They're almost certainly going to make the playoffs. The Thunder, if they had lost the game, it was very possible they could miss the playoffs altogether. Well, the Thunder came out with that level of intensity and made it to where they're almost certainly to make the playoffs now. The downside, that's the downside. The good news is that by virtue of winning the game, they have significantly decreased their odds of being the number 8 seed or the number 7 seed. It seems pretty likely that they're going to be the 6 outside shot at the 5, teams so tightly bunched between 4 and 9. The big game to watch for the Thunder, and especially if you respect them as a threat, is Monday night at Miami. And that's because the Thunder finale at home against Memphis, you have to imagine the Thunder are going to win that game fairly comfortably. So the swing game for Oklahoma City is at Miami Monday night. Miami, a quality team. Although you should point out, in the East, Miami now tied for the 6th spot with Milwaukee. Maybe there's some incentive for Miami to lose because the 7th seed in the East is going to play Boston without Kyrie Irving. So maybe the Heat have an incentive to not go all out in that game themselves. We'll have to wait and see. But on paper, it's a road game against a winning team. That's not going to be easy. So I'm looking at numbers courtesy of playoffstatus.com in terms of what happens if the Thunder win or lose their next game. That's at Miami on Thursday night. If the Thunder win that game, which personally I expect them to, I think they'll play with a similar intensity we saw on Saturday. When they do that, they're good. And their odds of being the 8th seed, which means they play the Rockets, are just 4%. Their odds of being the 7th seed, which means they play Golden State, are just 3%. On the contrary, if they lose, then the odds of being the 8th seed are 33%, and the odds of being the 7th seed are 27%. So it comes down to how much risk you are willing to take. If you cheer for Miami in that game and Oklahoma City loses, it boosts the odds that the Thunder are the 7th seed and could play Golden State in round one, a Golden State team is probably not going to have Stephen Curry. But it also boosts the odds to a third, which would make them the favorite, actually, that they could be the 8th seed and play the Rockets. So it depends on how much risk you're willing to take in terms of which scenario you want to choose for. And actually, I appear to have undersold it. If they win that game in Miami, actually, it looks like they could be a 4 or 5. I said they could be a 6 earlier. No, they could actually be a 4 or 5, it looks like, would be the likely scenario, which could put them on the Rockets' side of the bracket for the 2nd round. But ultimately, I'm not that worried about that scenario because, in my opinion, no matter who you play in the 2nd round, Portland, Oklahoma City, Utah, the Spurs, if somehow they get Kawhi Leonard back and win their first-round series, unlikely, but not impossible. I don't think there's going to be an easy 2nd-round series, so I'm slightly less worried about that. In my opinion, my bigger concern is getting the easiest first-round series you can, one series at a time. So personally, I think it's safer if the Thunder go out and win that game on Monday night against the Heat. But if they lose, it just increases the odds of chaos. It certainly means they won't be in your side of the bracket in the 2nd round, most likely. It's very hard for them to be the 4 or the 5 if they lose at Miami. It means they could play Golden State in the 1st round, which might be the dream scenario. But it also increases the odds that they could play Houston. So that's the thing to keep in mind with the Thunder. The swing game is at Miami Monday night. I don't think Wednesday home against Memphis is much of a swing game at all because the Thunder are going to win that game no matter what. But yeah, just decide how much you want to gamble when thinking about who you want to cheer for in that game. But the bottom line is Thunder at Miami Monday night. That's going to be the swing game in terms of whether they are in the 4-6 tier in the Western Conference or whether they're in kind of the back end, the 6-8. again, though, my expectation, just my personal prediction, is the Thunder win that game in Miami. I think they're a more talented team with more to play for because the Thunder, they get how good the Warriors and Rockets are. They prefer not to be the 7 or 8, so they have a real shot to get a series win under their belts and to continue to build chemistry. And the Heat actually have, well, they have a less talented team, but also they may have incentive to lose, to drop to the 7th spot to play the Boston Celtics in round 1. So ultimately, I think Oklahoma City wins that game, and if they do, the way it tracks is that you're likely, you've got two games on the final night of the regular season that are huge. The Timberwolves Nuggets, that's probably the biggest of all in NBA circles because it looks like the winner is probably going to make the playoffs and the loser would be out. That game is in Minnesota. And then Spurs Pelicans, that game in New Orleans. Both teams are likely to make the playoffs, but the winner is likely to be in a much better spot, whereas the loser is probably playing the Warriors or the Rockets. So in my opinion, it's the Timberwolves Nuggets winner and the Spurs-Pelicans loser that most likely are going to play the Rockets. That's if Oklahoma City wins in Miami, which I expect them to do. If Oklahoma City takes themselves out of the mix, then the Spurs-Pelicans win, or the Spurs-Pelicans loser, Timberwolves-Nuggets winner. Those are the two far and away likely scenarios for the Rockets in round one. I think Minnesota and Denver, the Rockets match up well against both. I'm a little bit torn because while the Timberwolves have been a better team throughout the season than Denver, for whatever reason, Denver seems to be peaking at the right time. They're not just winning these games. They seem to be winning them by a very healthy amount, as evidenced by the beatdown that they put on the Clippers in Staples Center on Saturday to knock the Clippers out of the playoffs, first time since 2011, which, by the way, speaks to the value of Chris Paul. Remember all those idiotic takes back in November for like the first week when the Clippers started off hot? Oh, are the Clippers better without him? No, they're not, as evidenced by missing the playoffs for the first time since 2011. Back to the point, though, Nuggets seem to be hot. Timberwolves kind of limping to the finish a little bit. Ultimately, Timberwolves still favored because they're going to be at home for that do-or-die game. Also, the Timberwolves, even if they're limping a little towards the finish, they do have potentially Jimmy Butler coming back and pair him with Karl-Anthony Towns, Jeff Teague, Andrew Wiggins. There are some dynamic individual talents that can make them very scary in any given game. So you can convince me either way on that, but the good news, the Rockets have dominated those two teams, Minnesota and Denver, all year long. Neither seems to defensively have any answer for what the Rockets do as a plan A. So ultimately, I think the Rockets would feel good about that. Pelicans and Spurs, the only thing that makes me a little bit uncomfortable is the Spurs and the unlikely scenario that Kawhi Leonard comes back. And because that game is in New Orleans, I would say the Pelicans are probably slight favorites. So the Spurs, if they don't have Kawhi, I don't really see them as all that daunting. Maybe it's a good thing that you would get challenged in the first round defensively, and it would make you adapt before you play tougher defensive teams like potentially Utah, Portland, of course, Golden State in later rounds. But in terms of Pelicans, Spurs, I think the Rockets are huge favorites against either. Maybe you slightly cheer for the Spurs because I think, however small the odds of Kawhi Leonard returning, if he does, certainly that makes them a little scarier. But that game is about as close to 50-50 as it gets. I think the Spurs are maybe a slightly better team than the Pelicans, but the game is in New Orleans, so that could really go either way. But as long as Kawhi doesn't return, then I think no matter who loses that game, you're in pretty good shape if you're the Rockets. So, in my opinion, three games to watch down the stretch of the year for the Rockets. OKC, Miami on Monday night, and then Timberwolves Nuggets and Spurs Pelicans on finale night. If Oklahoma City wins on Monday, they're probably out of the mix as far as the 8th seed, and then it comes down to those other two games, who wins, who loses, and of course that will be who opens the playoffs at Toyota Center next weekend when the NBA postseason finally gets underway. I say finally because the Rockets, well, they've clinched number one seed going back to March. So we've had a run now of several games in which there's not a lot of peak intensity, and I think all of us, including the Rockets themselves, are ready for games that have a little bit more meaning. So on that note, I will wrap it. As always, thanks to you guys, our loyal listeners, for tuning in. You want more from me, the best place to get it is Twitter. I'm at Ben Dubose. Show is at Locked On Rockets. Also email lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Website is lockedonrockets.com. Also go to Facebook at facebook.com/lockedonrockets. Those are all great places you can find our content. Subscribe to our feeds, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone. So many sources, just wherever you like to listen to your platforms. Subscribe to us. Leave us a 5-star review. That's how we remain viable to potential advertisers as the only daily podcast covering the NBA's best basketball team, now 64-16 on the season through 80 games. So until the road back-to-back finale late in Los Angeles against the Lakers on Tuesday night and late in Sacramento against the Kings on Wednesday night, I will sign off. Once again, the unhappy final from Toyota Center on Saturday night. Thunder 108, Rockets 102. Rockets, of course, fall again to 64-16 on the season. So have a good start to your week, folks, and we'll be talking again very soon right here on Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.